Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Saturday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Saturday evening, almost Sunday morning here on the East Coast. This is July 30th, 2022, and it is our post-SummerSlam edition of Wrestling Night in America. So thank you for joining us. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, here to walk you through the SummerSlam card and what an event it was. So before we run down the show, just if you're tuning in for the first time or it's been a while, just a reminder, you can call in and give your thoughts about SummerSlam. That number to call in is 515-605-9345. If you want to just hang out and listen, you can do so. If you want to give your opinion or ask any questions on air, you can press number 1, and you'll show up in the queue as wanting to talk. If it's too late for you, even on a Saturday night, to stay up and listen to the whole show, but you still want to give your opinions anyway, you can send an email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I have the emails open during the show, so feel free to call or email in, and we'll get to your emails and discuss them on the air here. But SummerSlam, the first pay-per-view of the Triple H creative era, with Vince McMahon out of WWE in all capacities now. And this was an event that, you know, Triple H certainly left his mark. And you don't want to run into a situation where you're reading too much into too many things too early. Certainly, if you followed the show on social media, a lot of people were pointing out some of the different verbiage the announcers were using. There were some other things that were very un-McMahon-like that were happening. So, you know, I don't know whether to attribute that to the different creative direction or if, you know, again, you don't want to look too deeply into things and kind of get lost in there, but certainly it had a different feel tonight for more than one reason. Starting off at the top of the show, we had Bianca Belair defeating Becky Lynch to retain the Raw Women's Championship. It appeared to be a face turn of sorts by Becky Lynch after the match, where she shook Bianca Belair's hand. Really, they could have gone one of two directions there. They could have gone with Becky sort of acknowledging that Belair is better, as she appeared to do here, or they could have continued Becky Lynch's downward spiral into the abyss and to get to have her get crazier and crazier as she loses. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Bayley made her return from injury. Okay, not too much of a surprise. Sort of anticipated that around the time of SummerSlam. Then Dakota Kai comes out, who, if you remember, got a few tryout matches on the main roster, off television, dark matches, but never made it up to the main roster permanently and was released. And then Io Shirai comes out, who, according to some reports, was on the verge of leaving NXT and did not appear to be in the main roster plans under Vince McMahon. And she is now known as Io Sky, by the way, her new WWE main roster name. And so those three came out one by one, but together stood in the ring at the end, and Becky Lynch stood side by side with Bianca Belair. So if Bayley does in fact have a triumvirate here, we'll see who, perhaps Asuka, Bianca Belair, and Becky Lynch add to take on these new challengers. But certainly and immediately freshening up the women's division on the Raw roster or the main roster period, because we know that the based on what we've seen over the last several weeks, the brand split is basically a name only at this point. Logan Paul defeating The Miz in match number 2. The talk had been, and we spent a lot of time on this a couple weeks ago when I was on the Raw post show with Wade Keller, discussing Logan Paul as a babyface and whether or not that is the direction WWE should be pushing. The fans in the arenas had not really picked up on Logan Paul as a babyface, even against The Miz. But by the end of this match, they seem to be with him. And I don't know if that's just kind of in that moment the fans were behind Logan Paul, or if that's something we can look for moving forward. Ciampa getting involved, getting kicked out of ringside, Maurice getting involved at one point. So Logan Paul getting the victory over The Miz, and it was a good match. I mean, Logan Paul looked good. I think he looked better than Pat McAfee at times, which is sort of hard to believe given how good Pat McAfee has looked. So that's that match. And I want to take a moment also to talk about Nissan Stadium. This was a stadium show that WWE put on in Nashville. It's my understanding we're going to have, I believe, a live correspondent calling in from Nashville a little later on, but I will say the way they shot the stadium, the crowd looked awesome. Now, that is with the caveat that it appears that they only sold one side of the stadium, the side opposite the hard camera, and the hard camera side was pretty much empty. So, you know, again, you don't see that on TV because of the way they shoot the stadium, but from how they shot it, it looked really good. A lot of fans, they were, you know, pretty into the show throughout SummerSlam. Match number three was Bobby Lashley defeating Theory to retain the U.S. title. This is a good match as well, decent enough. The loss by Theory here seemed to portend, if you are a student of the Money in the Bank cash-ins that are not announced ahead of time, usually if the Money in the Bank briefcase holder has a match on the show, he will lose the match if he's cashing in later on in the show. So Theory losing here, I think, set off a lot of light bulbs in people's minds that, oh, he might be cashing in a little later on. We'll get to that in just a moment. But Lashley looking good here, retaining the U.S. title over Theory. The Mysterios defeated the Judgment Day here in a no disqualification match. And yes, you still had the participants following tag team match rules, waiting for tags, all of that stuff, even though this was no DQ. And I had someone point out on Twitter when I tweeted that, at Greg M. Parks, by the way, that the legal man still has to have the pin. So that gives a reason to still have tags. You still have to have a legal man. It's not tornado rules. So that it kind of explains why they still did do tags, but it didn't really explain why there was not more frequent interference from the illegal man who could conceivably in this environment interfere at will and not be penalized for it. So this was okay match. Edge returned at the end and scared away Judgment Day, so Edge coming back and perhaps, you know, if Edge teams with the Mysterios here against Judgment Day, you could have Finn Balor and Damian Priest looking to recruit a new member. Match number five was Pat McAfee over Happy Corbin. This is a match where and it sort of happened a little bit in the Logan Paul match. Could have been warm out there at Nissan Stadium in Nashville, and you could have had wrestlers who are not used to wrestling every night, like McAfee and Logan, getting a little blown up, a little tired. And we saw McAfee at times not be as smooth as we've seen him before, losing his balance on the top rope, although he did not fall. And, you know, there's another instance where he did the code right off the middle rope, and it was not picture perfect as we've seen him with other matches in the past. So I'm not sure if, you know, you can chalk that up to just nerves in front of that many people, or if it was, you know, sort of the result of, you know, being in that heat, being in that humidity, and just, you know, not having that usual stamina that many wrestlers have. The next match was the Usos defeating the Street Profits. Jeff Jarrett was special referee here. So this was not a match that lived up to previous incarnations. Jarrett basically played this down the middle, did not really factor much into the result, but it felt a little shorter than the epics that we've seen from these guys in the past. And, it was good, but it did not live up to again, what we've seen in the past. Montez Ford getting exasperated, getting angry toward the end of the match. Announcers drew attention to it. You have to wonder if, and I know there's been some talk about Montez Ford impressing people backstage, remaking his body, adding some muscle. You have to wonder if, with new management now, are they considering Montez Ford as a singles? So, you could draw a straight line in the story from the Street Profits and Montez Ford specifically getting tired of not being able to beat the Usos. I think they made a big deal of the Usos being champions for over a year now. And so Montez Ford could just decide, hey, in storyline, of course, we've gone as far as we can as a tag team. I'm tired of the losing to the Usos. I'm tired of being in second place. I'm going to try to do things on my own. I mean, you could see a scenario where that plays out. We had Matt Riddle coming out from the crowd after that match and challenging Seth Rollins. Of course, the match not taking place as advertised ahead of time because in storyline Riddle's injury. So Seth Rollins comes out, answers the challenge, briefly brawls with Riddle and gets the best of him. Agents, referees coming out to try to break things up. So that is how we left it with Rollins and Riddle. So I would bet on that one for Clash at the Castle in September. Liv Morgan defeated Ronda Rousey to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship in the semi-main event. No Charlotte Flair here, as some had predicted. Morgan, the finish here was unique. There was a lot of mat wrestling here in this one, a lot of exchanging of holds. Morgan getting the victory, and a controversial victory. Ronda Rousey's shoulders were pinned to the mat as she had Morgan in a submission hold. As the referee reached two on counting Rousey's shoulders to the mat, Morgan tapped out. But because Morgan was on her feet tapping out and the referee was down making the count, he did not see the tap out, awarding the victory to Liv Morgan. Ronda Rousey was angry after the match and attacked Morgan. And so, Rousey, even as a babyface, still has that fire, but this did seem to hint toward perhaps a heel turn. Now, how that works with Charlotte Flair coming back soon as a heel and those two having unfinished business is unclear. Then you had the main event, which was the spectacle to end all spectacles. Roman Reigns defeating Brock Lesnar in a last man standing match. And in my notes, all I wrote for this match was tractor with an exclamation point. Because Brock Lesnar brought out a tractor to ringside, used it to dump at one point Roman Reigns from the front loader inside the ring, and then at another point almost tipped over the ring, brought the ring off the ground where it stayed, by the way, for the rest of the match. Theory came out ready to cash in, but he was laid out before he could cash in. Brock Lesnar gives Paul Heyman an F5 on a table. Reigns ends up spearing Lesnar, hitting him with the title belts, burying him in various garbage at ringside to keep Lesnar down for the count of 10. Usos getting involved as well, so Roman Reigns retains. Theory does not cash in successfully or unsuccessfully here, despite the many teases ahead of time. So, thumbs up show. Definitely felt like the fingerprints of a new creative regime at times with Bayley and her group coming out and with the spectacle in the main event. This felt like new creative wanting you to remember their first major event. And so, again, you don't want to read too much into things. And we've seen under Vince McMahon that spectacles like the main event have happened before. They've happened before in Reigns-Lesnar matches. So you don't want to read too much into it, but certainly, if not a main intention, then a side effect of this show is that it puts a new stamp on WWE Creative. So if you're just joining us, as many of you have, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks doing the SummerSlam Autopsy here on July 30th, 2022. And you can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can email your thoughts about SummerSlam to wnialivecast@gmail.com. And you can call in and give your thoughts. We're on the air live, 515-605-9345. We've got two folks on hold, so it shouldn't take long. If you want to jump into the fray, make sure to press 1 to chat. But without further ado, we're going to go right to the phones, the 623 area code, 623. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, this is Brian calling from Phoenix, a 31-year senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Brian. Good to hear from you tonight. Love to get your thoughts on SummerSlam.
It's always good to talk to you too, Greg. And I'm not going to stay on very long because I know it just hit midnight on the East Coast, 9 o'clock here in Phoenix.
Hey, it's no problem. I got nothing going on tomorrow. I can stay with you as long as you want.
There we go. Thanks to those Saturday. Thanks to the Saturday's Premium Live Event, PLE, Premium Live
exactly.
Event. So, Greg, to be honest, you know, I can't give SummerSlam a complete grade because I had to run errands when it first started. So I was walking through the supermarket during the Bianca Belair Becky Lynch match, and I sent you I kind of ribbed you a little bit, and I sent you a picture about the water being gone, the Pure Life water already being
yes,
sold out.
Yes, how could I forget the commercial that the Maximum Male Models did for Pure Water? Just if you didn't get a chance to see it, I'm sure it's up on YouTube or somewhere. That's one you got to. I don't think words do it justice. I think that's one you got to see for yourself. So I won't even try to put that ad into words.
I will. I would agree with you as well. And I would say that I'm glad to see Max Dupree back because, you know, there were rumors that he was out. But, you know, again, everything changes once once Vince McMahon actually retired. So I'm going to get to a couple things really quick, and I'll let some other callers get on, and you can read some emails. First of all, Theory's briefcase, has that been like the most used briefcase that we've ever seen? I mean, he's had it for maybe a little over a month now, and how dented up and how beaten up is it? I think maybe Edge when Edge won it the first time, or he was the first one to win Money in the Bank, how much he used it as far as it being dented up. But it's just been Theory's briefcase has just been beaten up by everybody.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the briefcase is no stranger to being used as a weapon, but certainly I think you could make the case that Theory has used it more often than others. Certainly as a heel, he's probably going to use it more often than the babyfaces who've won the briefcase. They don't tend to use it as a weapon as often. So, yeah, I think there's certainly a case to be made, and who knows how much longer he's going to hold it. So how many more times it's going to be used as a weapon.
I would agree. And we'll have to see what happens at Clash. Every time I say, I think, Clash at the Castle, I want to say Clash of Champions so much, Greg. You will not believe it.
And it's funny because, you know, it's in September when WWE used to hold their Clash of Champions pay-per-view. So it is that just kind of adds to that temptation, I think.
I would agree with you. The only other thing I want to talk to you about is, I want you to mention, I know you talked about it when the show first came on because it was the first match, and I was dialing in at that time, but would you see Bayley being more of a manager to Dakota Kai and Io Sky rather than a competitor? Because the way she came out, the way she said it, you know, and by the way, those stadium shows, and I digress for a second, the people sitting on the floor, it's not, you know, you're pretty much looking at the monitor because just the way how the setup goes. And I feel sorry for the people who were on that ringside part when Brock Lesnar raised the ring up because I know they couldn't see anything from their seats. But, you know, as Bayley walked out and she was talking a lot more, I wish they would have gave her a mic or she walked out with the mic. But do you see her being more of a manager type, you know, I don't know what the status of her injury is, but more of a manager type to Dakota and EO versus being an actual competitor. What was your take on it? I know it was a short amount of time, too, as I say all this.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily get that sense at the time, but now that you bring it up, I can see where you could read that into the situation. you know, I think if you look at it from the point of view of, you know, and I think Bailey, speaking of her injury, I think she is ready to come back at this point. And she's been ready for a while. I think it's just been a matter of kind of waiting to the right time to bring her back. But one thing to keep in mind, too, is, you know, and I don't know what Triple H's relationship is in terms of Sasha Banks and Naomi, whether he can get them back, whether they've made overtures to them to try to get them to come back to WWE now that Vince McMahon is out, since their main issue seemed to be Vince. But the women's tag team titles have been persona non grata in the last several weeks since Banks and Naomi have left. So if you look at Dakota Kai and Io Sky as a potential tag team with Bayley managing them, you could imagine a scenario where they come in right away and win a match or a short tournament to win those tag titles if Banks and Naomi don't come back. And so, you know, it could be a stable where Bayley wrestles occasionally, but maybe the focus is on Dakota Kai and Io Sky. But then you also have to think, you know, Bianca Belair has just defeated Becky Lynch pretty convincingly, and that should end that feud. And there's not really another contender on Raw that you could see who would step up to face Bianca Belair. Asuka is there. She's always got that built-in credibility, but they hadn't been using her in that way, and I think she's been defined down a little bit right now. So you could also see a scenario where Bayley steps right into that role and challenges Bianca Belair and is the next person to face Belair. I think Belair is a personality that you want to keep her in the spotlight. She's not someone who, you know, you're going to settle for having sort of this mid-level feud over the Raw Women's title. I think you want to keep her in a prominent position, and having someone the level of Bayley challenging her would do just that.
I would agree, and I'm glad you mentioned it, Greg, about, because I totally forgot, probably like everybody else, the Women's Tag Team Championship, and that would be a carrot to dangle in front of them. And as another digress really quick, I'm really glad they brought back the NXT Women's Tag Team Championship, because when it was thrown away by Cora, I thought, I was like, okay, that's how they end it. And then, but I like how they did bring back Alundra Blaze to pull it out, or help pull out the trash can, and with Roxanne. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I didn't even think about that part.
I will say, I'll digress on your digression a little bit. That poor woman, Medusa, has spent decades in the wrestling business. She's done so much. And her career at this point is now the person who constant, whenever WWE brings her back on television, it's to make a reference to her that one moment where she threw the WWE women's title in the trash on WCW TV. That's all they use her for. That's all her career has been siphoned down to. And I think in many ways that's a shame, but you know, she's still doing it, so I guess it's okay with her. But yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to go off on that tangent.
No, I'm glad you digressed to that, because we'll stay in this digression part, because I'm not sure about yourself, but definitely I was watching live when that happened. And, you know, I didn't realize that, even though I was a Torch subscriber then, there's a plug, that I didn't realize that Medusa Alundra was released. And maybe, you know, maybe I just missed something with it. And so when she showed up there and she had the title and she threw it away, I was, you know, me and my friend, you know, he was a more WCW guy and I was more a WWF guy at that time. So we both were, like, shocked looking at each other as she did that. So I could see why they keep bringing her back to do it, because if we go back and we play it back and we you know, fans like us who were live watching it then, that was like, you know, if you take, you know, somebody from, you know, let's say if you take Bianca going to AEW and doing the same thing, it would be almost the same thing. You know, is AEW at the same level of WCW at that particular time? You know, that's up for debate for smarter people like yourself and the Torch staff to talk about that part. Greg, thanks a lot for having me on. We'll let some other people get on and talk about other things. I really appreciate it. I would like to plug, though, that the Torch does have a subscriber sale going on. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, I was going to plug that as soon as you got off the phone. But, yeah, it is a 99-cent VIP sale tonight, where you can become a PW Torch VIP member in time for the SummerSlam post-pay-per-view roundtable VIP podcast, which is very popular. Wade Keller hosts that after every pay-per-view slash premium live event. You can get loads of inside information and insight from people in the business about the Vince McMahon situation, the changeover to Triple H in creative, and Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan as co-CEOs. So all of that, and it's a deal. You can get it for 99 cents tonight, entering the code SLAM99 at PWTorchVIPinfo.com. So, Brian, thank you for helping me segue into that.
Well, I appreciate it. As I, when you first let me on, I said I was a 31-year Torch subscriber, Torch VIP subscriber, and I'm under the ring control of it, so I only pay 99 cents per year because that's how long I've been subscribing. So just let you know about that part, too. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Mr. Wade Keller, editor, publisher Wade Keller, I should say. So, Greg, again, I appreciate all the hard work you do, you know, every Saturday, Sunday night, Wrestling Night in America. Uh-huh. I appreciate your hard work, and it's always good to talk to everybody. Go VIP, and, you know, listen to all the Torch audio is just incredible for on the VIP side. So other than that, that's it, Greg. I hope you have a real good night, and hopefully everybody else has a great night as well. Thanks a lot, as always, for having me on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling in, Brian. Always love to hear your insight after these pay-per-views slash PLEs. I'm never going to get used to calling in that. But that reminds me, another plug Brian brought up there, and that's Wrestling Night in America. Who are we? What do we do? Well, for those listening for, again, the first time, we are live every Sunday night, unless there is a AEW or WWE pay-per-view on Saturday night. Then we go on the air right after that show. And we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. So you can find us at pwtorchdailycast.com, 8 p.m. Eastern every Sunday night. I'm usually joined on those episodes by a member of the Torch staff, a member of the Torch family, who co-hosts with me, and we preview the big events coming up. We talk about big events that have just happened, both pay-per-view and on television. And we go for, you know, as long as we get phone calls and emails and things of that nature. So I always love to host this. I've been hosting it for a while now and love interacting with the fans and you know, talking with the members of the Torch family. So 8 p.m. Eastern every Sunday night, unless, again, there's a AEW or WWE pay-per-view. And we love going on the air after those shows and giving the focus then to those pay-per-views. So, again, wnialivecast@gmail.com is our email that you can send to us anytime. We've only got one phone call left on hold. So if you do want to call in, 515-605-9345, press 1 to show up in the queue, and I will call on you. So let's go to DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. I'd love to get your thoughts on SummerSlam.
It was okay. Nothing too crazy, you know. I missed old SummerSlam.
Nothing too crazy. They tipped over a ring, DJ.
Yeah, but we saw when, you know, Stone Cold did that, you know. Hint, hint. I'm just kidding. It was all right. It was nothing, you know, crazy. But, I mean, going into that, we talked about this before. Reigns is just not available too much anymore. They need a champion on both shows, and I don't have it, and I hate it. I can't watch a show with no champion. It just not feels like a show. And then now that Brock's going to be gone for a while, it's just like now it's just going to get worse. And then now that, you know, people are getting hurt left and right, it's just like, what do we have? The Miz and Paul and, like, you know, Bobby by himself. I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about the no champs on Raw. I think that really has hurt the direction of the main event scene. And you're right, we've talked about this before here on Wrestling Night in America, is it just seemed like horrible timing to put both titles on Roman Reigns just as he was beginning to sort of have his time cut back in WWE and not appear on as many house shows, not appear on as many TV events and even pay-per-views, you know. You know, his focus has been SmackDown most of the time, and rightfully so, I think. And so what you've been left with on Raw is sort of this directionless show with nothing to build around at the top, especially because Brock Lesnar, and they've tried. They've put Reigns on Raw and things like that, but it's just it hasn't been the same. So, you know, if I'm Triple H, one of the things that I bring to the creative table is and to bring to the creative team is kind of, okay, how do we get one of the titles off Reigns? Like, I'm cool with them keeping one of the titles on Reigns, you know, even though that presents some other issues on the other brand if he's not going to be around all that often. But I don't think you can have both titles on him. So, you know, I go to the creative team, I say, what are some ideas that we can come up with that take the title off of Reigns but keep him as strong as we can? Because I don't think that's going to change under Triple H. So, yeah, it's a tough situation, and I think you're right. I think the shows have been hurt because he's got both belts and he's not around as much.
I just don't know what they're going to do. It's just, you know, they could have did something like, I'm just making an example real quick, like goes to the second question, like Brock could have won it, the one of the belts, Fury could have won it, and then at the end of the day, tomorrow, Bobby could have won it. You see what I'm saying? Or something like that. Yeah, something. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I was thinking if Theory cashes in, they could put some rule in there where he's only cashing in on one title, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, they could have done something after tonight where Reigns is just so beat up after this match with Lesnar that Theory takes advantage. So you get one title off of him, and ultimately Reigns is still champion of one of the titles, but now he's got a different motivating factor, right? He's got a title, but he's angry that he lost. So now he's, you can kind of change the direction of his character slightly because now he's got a different bent to him. So that's something that, you know, and who knows, maybe they decide to do that at some point with Theory down the line or even, you know, at Clash of the Castle, you have Drew McIntyre, and somehow between now and then, you have only one of the titles being on the line. Even though I think that would kind of telegraph that McIntyre is winning by only going after one title. I don't know, but there's got to be a way. I feel like.
Yeah, that's what I'm confused on. So that's why I had to bring up that question. And then my second thing is going into like this PG-14 thing. It's just like they have nobody. Everybody's hurt. It's just like, what are they going to do? It's just like, Braun Breaker is just, it's like he's like, you know, a wild dog just waiting to go to Raw or do something. It's just like they need something, somebody to, I don't know, it's just like, what are they going to do, you know? Unless the only way this is possible now is just like put them all together and no more brand split. I don't know. It's just like, if they're going to do something needs to be done now because Vince is going to be gone or not even saying, I don't know, like how much Vince is going to, you know, be in Triple H's ear.
Yeah, that's, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, the email that Vince is going to send Triple H tomorrow with the, with the title, notes, RE SummerSlam Creative and what that would look like. And, you know, I don't know. I think there could be, I don't know if there could be repercussions for WWE if it's found out that Vince still has some power within WWE or even has Triple H's ear after they, you know, signal that he was retired. I don't know if there's anything, you know, from a Wall Street point of view, whether or not that could be troublesome for, you know, for stock related reasons. But, you know, in terms of the injuries, they do have some injuries, certainly not to the level that AEW has been dealing with injuries of late. The Riddle injury, I think, is kind of a work. Edge coming back is going to help them, you know, and so, you know, Charlotte's going to be coming back soon, Bayley coming back from the women's side. So they are getting people back. I don't worry too much about that. But, yeah, I mean, I had to laugh because, you know, all this hay is being made about WWE going TV-14 and SummerSlam being advertised as TV-14 ahead of time. And then in the Jason Aldean song that they were using as the official theme song of SummerSlam at the video package at the beginning, they sort of censored the word drunk that he used. And I'm like, boy, if you can't say drunk under TV-14, I mean, I don't know how TV-14 it's going to be, but yeah, the injury situation I don't worry too much about. The Vince thing, you know, unless we have evidence that he's still giving his opinion or any reporting that he's, you know, got his fingerprints on things creatively, I think at this point we should take the retirement right now at its word.
Yeah, it's just like if Vince thinks flipping the ring over is TV-14, we have problems now. So I don't know. I'm just going out of this, I'm just scared for until WrestleMania, until Royal Rumble. I don't know. It's just like I don't know what's really going to go on because we don't know who's going to really run the ship, or we'll find out, I guess, in the next couple weeks, you know?
When you say running the ship, you mean in terms of creative?
Like Vince, you know, like have little, you know, we can tell if Vince is running it or Bruce is, you know, have, you know, his hand in it, or, you know, it's Triple H. Like, it's, you know, maybe he'll go back to NXT.
Did you feel watching the show tonight that Vince was somehow involved?
Kind of a little. With the Brock Lesnar thing, that's like Stone Cold stuff. So I guess at the end of the day, yes.
Well, I mean, the one thing you have to think about in terms of creative is the people who are writing, the people who are on the creative staff in WWE, they know wrestling writing based on working under Vince McMahon. You know, we know that Vince has brought in, you know, TV writers and things like that, people who don't necessarily have a background in professional wrestling. So for a lot of them, what they know was taught to them by Vince McMahon. And so, I mean, it's going to take a while to sort of break that. Even Triple H, I mean, he's a guy who, you know, broke in WCW nationally, and, you know, he's studied the business from a lot of different angles and is a student of the game. But I mean, a lot of his creative, and we saw NXT was at times very different than the main roster creatively, but, you know, a lot of the learning that he's done was under Vince McMahon. So, you know, I understand the reticence in wanting to completely put your arms around a different creative vision at this point and being skeptical of that because Vince has had such a stranglehold on WWE for so long. The idea that he would give it up cold turkey is something that I think people, and yourself included, DJ, are skeptical of, and maybe rightfully so. But, you know, following on social media, my timeline on Twitter seemed to point out a lot of things that were said and done on this show that were not very Vince McMahon-like. So we've been warned by, you know, people like Wade Keller and, you know, people who have spoke to those in WWE that it may take a while for the major creative changes to be felt on TV for a number of reasons. And so, you know, even tonight where there were little things that you could pick up on that were different than maybe a Vince McMahon scripted SummerSlam would look like, that's still something to hang your hat on, I think.
Right. I just don't know. I really do feel like his fingerprints are there somewhere. I don't know. Like you said, we'll see in time. So, and my last thing is EAW. Let me ask you a quick question before I go into my question. Do you think that after scrum thing that they do with all the wrestlers, do you think that's hurting Tony Khan because he talks too much and the wrestlers talk too much, or do you think this is good for the wrestlers and for Tony to talk and act, you know, like they do? And it's just, what do you think? Do you think that it's more face, or do you think
I don't think it's hurting the wrestlers. I think very rarely do you see any kind of blowback from social media about things the wrestlers say in those post-show scrums. I do think I applaud and appreciate what Tony Khan is trying to do and the intention of trying to be transparent in some ways, certainly more transparent than his competition. And embracing the wrestling media and allowing them to ask him questions about the show. Like, I think that's a good thing. But there are times when Tony kind of opens himself up, and he's got that personality where he's going to say more than he should, more often than he probably will say less than he should. And again, that's just Tony. And so, you know, I think there are some times where things Tony says kind of blow up on social media in a way that maybe AEW doesn't like. And I do have to wonder, to kind of circle this back to WWE, given that we're talking about SummerSlam tonight, Triple H, when he was in charge of NXT, would do those conference calls with a lot of the same wrestling media folks before takeovers. And you have to wonder, now that he's in charge of creative, now that he is, you know, the in charge of personnel, even on the WWE main roster side, if he's going to start doing that before, you know, obviously with all the tumult going on right now in WWE behind the scenes and the changeover. It didn't happen before SummerSlam, but you have to wonder, maybe Clash of the Castle or the next pay-per-view, if he does, you know, the week of a big show coming up, if he does that kind of conference call with media like he did in NXT on the main roster. So I think that'd be interesting if he did that. But, you know, to answer your question, I do think it can cause problems with Tony Khan because of the way his personality is. But I think overall it's a net plus for AEW, because, you know, they're being covered, not only the pay-per-view is being covered, but the things he says in the post-show scrums, people are writing stories about him. And so that's giving AEW a lot more coverage. It's giving them a lot more air in the wrestling news cycle. The fact that his comments are being written up, and I think the more attention, if you're AEW, the more attention you can get from this fan base, the better off you're going to be and the better chance you have to thrive.
Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, I had to ask, because there's some good things and bad things. That's why I had to ask you going, you know, it's like, some people, you know, was like a 50-50, but it's just weird because he'll say stuff like about Jim Cornette, then he'll compliment Jim Cornette, like, I'm so confused, and then he'll say something, and then they'll say something else, and he'll compliment somebody else, like, that's so funny how he does that, you know. That's why I had to ask, you know, what did you think of the scrums?
Yeah, I get you.
And my last, going into my last real quick thing, at the end of the day, AEW, it's just like they're doing the same things over and over and over again. It's just like they really need to sit down, and now that Vince and, you know, it's gone, Triple H is there now, they don't really have to fight like they were in the beginning. They can just relax and slow down and build storylines and not just rush like the WWE is constantly doing. You know, I don't know why they have so many good talents. It's just like they're over-rushing with these guys. And, you know, I don't like why they would rush when they have plenty of time. They're not going anywhere. You know, they're going to be here for a very long time now, especially Vince.
Can you give me an example of something you feel is being rushed?
Just like certain storylines, you know, they rush it a little. Like, they could have waited on certain things, or they should have went to certain people, you know, getting the title, you know, title shots, you know, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I disagree. I think they've really – I mean, you look at the Wardlow turn on MJF. I mean, that's a perfect example. It was a year and a half in the making. And then finally, at the perfect moment, they turned him. You know, so that was you know, the Christian turn on Jungle Boy. I mean, how many times were people predicting Christian turning on Jungle Boy? It didn't happen. And finally, when it did, it kind of took people by surprise. You know, the Luchasaurus thing, I mean, that was something that, you know, Luchasaurus being with Christian and then, I guess, going to Jungle Boy, that I think people were really intrigued by the Luchasaurus-Christian relationship after Christian turned on Jungle Boy. And I think people would have liked to have seen that played out a little longer rather than have Luchasaurus go right with Jungle Boy when he returned. So, you know, maybe that, but I think that's a pretty minor story. You know, ultimately the story is Jungle Boy Christian. That's your moneymaker. You know, so other than that, I can't really think of any solid examples to agree
the
with
champs. That's the Bucks. That's the main thing. It's just like, give other people a chance. You know.
What about the Bucks?
It's just like, you know, they could have gave it up to MJF and the belts, and, you know, everybody would have been happy, and then maybe they could have put them all, they did something with the Briscoes, then the Briscoes could have won, you know, the ROH belt, something, you know, I don't know, you know what I'm saying, they could have did something, you know, but stuff like that, you know, or, you know, hopefully sooner or later they'll do it, you know.
Well, I mean, the Bucks, the Briscoes, it's hard to say that they should have done Briscoes Bucks when the Briscoes FTR was so awesome twice.
Yeah.
The Briscoes aren't going to be on AEW TV. That's a Turner decision. And really, you know, the Bucks were away from the tag titles for quite a while. And so, you know, they come back and win them. And you know, I don't know.
Okay.
I get what you're saying, but I can't think of any really, really good examples that would fit under that umbrella.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it sucks that they, you know, they had to win them. That so many other people could have won them, you know. So
the tag titles. Like, I mean, I would argue that the Young Bucks are probably one of the top two or three best teams in AEW. So I, you know, with them winning the titles, and it's not like they've monopolized the titles over the last year or so. I, you know, I think there were even people who were saying
tag teams
Young
out
Bucks
there.
Should
that's
be in the
hate.
Title.
Yeah. So there's just so many good people out there. And, you know,
they do. I mean, it's a big roster. So, I mean, when you look at it from that angle, that it is a big roster with so many talented people, you can't push everybody as main eventers all the time. You know, somebody's going to perceived as underutilized and things like that. And I think that's just a reality that people have to accept.
Yeah, I just had to ask, like, what do you think about the booking? Because now coming out of that, you know, like the scrum, what he was saying and everything. So that was it.
All right. Thanks for the call, DJ.
Thank you so much. I'll see you next week.
All righty. So we got one more person on hold. If you want to call in, 515-605-9345. If not, we'll be done after the next caller. So come on in if you'd like to talk. 860 is next. 860, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, this is Paul calling from Mystic.
Paul, good to hear from you. What's on your mind tonight, SummerSlam related?
Well, I got to say, I did want to push back a little bit on the last caller and others who have complained about the part-time champion situation. I do think having, you know, Roman only appear every few weeks or Brock before him, it does certainly make the champion feel special and extra important. And certainly I don't think the card tonight would have benefited from an extra world championship match or an extra tag team championship match. So in my opinion, the combined championship really has some positives associated with it.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at a pay-per-view lineup and you look at, and this is a problem that AEW is going to have going forward too, is when every match is a championship match, the idea of championship matches sort of loses its appeal. So the idea that we only have one major championship match tonight instead of two, you know, I think that helped make Lesnar Reigns feel more special. But the downside of that is you're sacrificing, I think, quality of television every week to make that one show a month show feel more special. So I think you have to weigh that. You know, is it worth not having a champion and not really having a direction at the top of Raw, not having that one prize that everybody is clawing toward, not having a champion show up on that brand and represent that brand? Is it worth making a title match on a premium live event feel slightly more important than it otherwise would be if there was another championship match? So again, you have to weigh that. Some people are going to weigh it more that, yes, it's worth it. Some people are going to weigh it that it's not.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. It also has a possibility to elevate the Intercontinental and U.S. titles. It would be nice to see the Intercontinental Championship make a premium live event now and again.
It'd be nice. And you'd think, you would hope that, you know, I think that Raw could easily do that. They say, okay, you know, Roman Reigns isn't going to be on TV every week. He's not going to have the championship on Raw every week. Let's make the U.S. title the championship of Raw. Let's make that the focus of Raw. Let's make that what people are vying for, especially when you've got, I mean, you know that Drew McIntyre is facing Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle in a month. So that's really a SmackDown-focused feud. So now, if you're Raw, why don't you take that U.S. title and say, okay, for the next month, everybody's going to be chasing the U.S. title because Roman Reigns is facing Drew McIntyre. We're not looking for a new challenger to the championship. We're, you know, why not make the U.S. title what people are battling for? So they could do that. We've seen no evidence that WWE is interested in doing that, but with the caveat that we're going to use now going forward for the next few months, we haven't seen this creative team in charge of it. So I guess it makes it a little slightly more possible than it would have been if Vince McMahon were still in charge.
I agree. It's a really exciting time. I'm sort of anticipating some changes and already excited to see some, seeing Max Dupree back. I think he's a great talent. And it seems like that has Prince on it. And Io Shirai has been waiting to come up to the main roster she's been ready for years. And I don't think it's coincidence she's come up. And to see Dakota, wasn't she fired? Is she just rehired? Is that true?
Apparently. I mean, yeah, she was let go in one of the previous batches of cuts. And so this must be a rehiring.
Yeah. So I think these are all, you know, huge, big decisions. And I was interested in your take on the KO promo. I haven't seen KO get a promo like that in geez, feels like 10 years, which makes me think that it's possible, and maybe this is wishful thinking, that he's, you know, that they have a push, you know, in mind for him.
Did I miss something? Was that on the pre-show or was that on the main?
No, it was on the main show. They showed a long sort of, it was interesting. I didn't see it covered in the report of the show on the Torch, but it was a sort of a retrospective of KO, and it didn't seem to be, you know, promoting anything in particular, but it went throughout his career and showed some of his greatest hits and made him look like $1 million.
I think there's a difference depending on what Peacock subscription you have in what kind of ads and videos you get in between the matches. So there was a really long period very early in the show where it was like 5 minutes of commercials that I got.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's where they put the KO video. I think it depends on your subscriber tier of Peacock as to what you get.
Okay.
So that might be why it wasn't in the report. That might be why I didn't see it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I don't get regular commercials in Peacock. Could be I got a WWE.
Oh, yeah, okay. So
instead,
we must be on different ones.
Yeah, so maybe not as much to make for it, but it wasn't like an advertisement for some program on Peacock or anything like that. So I was hopeful that might be a harbinger of something good to come for KO, who is like, I mean, who's better on the mic than that guy? He's just fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this stuff with Ezekiel has, to a certain extent, allowed him to show a little more range on the mic. And, you know, he's very good, maybe to a fault, at sort of the comedy stuff, because we know that it's, first of all, it's not easy to do comedy in wrestling. And so when you can do it well, they kind of gravitate you toward that. At the expense of your push, usually, because comedy does not equal money in professional wrestling. So if you're a wrestler who's going to be known for your comedy, you're probably not in the main events or anything like that. So it's a good news, bad news situation that he's so good at that. But with the situation with the lack of depth on Raw, and, you know, Triple H has been very close to Kevin Owens, came up through the NXT system with Triple H in charge. So you wonder if he's a guy who's going to be looked at differently. He didn't have the body type that Vince McMahon would really get behind as a major star. But with Triple H, you wonder if he's going to be seen in a different light.
Mm. Yeah. Well, here's hoping.
For sure.
I also wanted to mention, I really did enjoy the Maximum Male Model, the callback to Zoolander. I don't know if you caught that, but with them throwing, getting in a fight with the water, was a callback to Zoolander when they're getting in a fight with the gasoline at the gasoline station.
I'll be honest, I you know, I like Ben Stiller. I like Will Ferrell. That came out at about the time that, like, Anchorman came out, which is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah.
I watched Zoolander, and I hated it. Like, I did not like Zoolander. And I don't know what the deal was because, you know, with my sense of humor, you would think that would be kind of right up my alley in terms of movies. But I did not like it. And so, I mean, it's cool that was, you know, the reference to it because I know that Zoolander has become sort of a cult favorite for a lot of people. Mm. But, yeah, that was not a movie that I enjoyed for some reason.
Well, I think that Maximum Male Model takes much of its inspiration from that movie, and so far in a positive way. I'm just enjoying it for what it is. What's your take on what they've done so far?
I like it. I like Max Dupree / L.A. Knight / Sean Ricker / everybody else, Eli Drake, and so. I think, you know, his best asset is talking. And so I am not surprised that they make him this manager, this mouthpiece for Maximum Male Models. And he's chewing the scenery. He's doing what you need to do in that role. I mean, it's not a serious role by any stretch, and he is playing it to the hilt. So if you take it for what it is, which is camp, you know, I think people seem to really like it. In a sort of ironic way.
Hard to imagine that Main Event Bound, but I do think he's great in the ring also. So if they don't use him in that capacity, to some degree, that'll be a disappointment.
Yeah.
Finally,
he's good enough
quick,
in the ring. I think he's shown just enough to get by.
Okay, all right. I would give him higher marks than that, but but we can agree to disagree on that one. The other thing I wanted to mention is I was pleased with Ronda versus Liv. I saw them wrestle a week ago at a house show in Bridgeport, and Liv got so much offense to be considered unbelievable. And this I really thought seemed a little more down to earth, and they somehow managed to make it so that Liv was able to hold on to the title and not become another, who was it, who lost the title after winning it in the Money Bank last year, almost a superhero. Nikki
A.S.H.
Ash. Yeah, I mean, it ended up, that title run did nothing for her. And that would have happened to Liv, I think, if she would have lost it as soon as she got it. But at the same time, you know, hopefully move Ronda towards a heel turn, which I'm very excited about. It seems like that could be a role that suits her much better than her current role.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Paul, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate hearing from you and hope you have a good rest of the night.
Thanks. You too, Greg.
Absolutely. Let's go to our next call. We've got Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Good to talk to you tonight.
Greg, I'm glad I got in, man. I'm sorry I got in late, didn't get a chance to hear a lot, so I'm hoping my views might not be too crazy, you know, already kind of what you've already heard. But how are you, man? It's good to talk to you on a SummerSlam night.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Good to talk to you, too. Always look forward to hearing your thoughts after these premium live events that we see.
Yeah, no doubt. I was actually at a friend's house while I had just gotten back recently, so I was glad I got in. No, I disagree with Paul, and that Liv Ronda did not work for me at all. I mean, the only thing I liked about it was Ronda, you know, quote-unquote turning heel. That was fine. The way she did it, did not like. The match was just, I mean, how do you, this doesn't help Liv. Like, anybody that says this helps Liv, I'm sorry, like, this doesn't help her. Like, okay, they didn't see her tapping. She got, I mean, like Brandon said in the report, which I didn't even read it till just now, she got dominated. She absolutely dominated. Yeah, she won because she somehow got Ronda's shoulders and she was dumb enough to let her shoulders be on the mat. The finish to that was awful, in my opinion. I don't know how anybody can like the finish to that match and how they did that. I mean, Greg, you might have talked about it. People might have talked about it. You probably already gave your thoughts. But I just wanted to overemphasize that finish was not good. And Ronda turning heel, yes, that was fine. I mean, that's where she needs to go. That was obvious for anybody that knows Ronda and knows that she sucks as a babyface. You could point that out from a mile away, and I know you agree with me on that. But I just the match was was bad. I mean, the match was good for the crispness of some of the moves in the match, but the finish I just thought was terrible. I thought it was bad, really bad.
Yeah, the story going in, and they replayed it on the video package, was Liv basically admitting that Ronda Rousey was better than her, but Liv wanted it more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the story you saw play out in the match. Ronda Rousey was better than Liv Morgan. She was capturing Liv in all these holds and all these moves, but Liv was always able to escape. She was always able to get to the rope. She was always able to counter. And, you know, ultimately, yeah, the finish, I can see why they would want to do that. You know, Liv Morgan is not a wrestler who's going to come in and dominate. That's not her character. That's not she wrestles.
Right.
And so, you know, this sort of backdoor thing, I think, was more about Ronda. I know, shocking. But it was more about Ronda and her heel turn than it was about making Liv Morgan look strong. And so, you know, the next question is, where does it go from here? Because I think a lot of people expected Charlotte Flair to come back here at SummerSlam. Where does Charlotte fit in now with Ronda apparently turning heel? Now you've got heel Ronda and heel Charlotte. And as bad of a babyface as Ronda is, I think Charlotte might be worse. So I don't think you want to turn Charlotte babyface and have her face a heel Ronda.
Yeah.
No. So it is very confusing. It is about Ronda and less about Liv Morgan. The nice thing is, I don't, and, you know, this is sort of a backhanded compliment, but ultimately I don't think this is going to hurt Liv Morgan's reactions that she's been getting. You know, she's been getting more and more positive reactions from the fans. She's been improving in the ring, on the mic. So I think this is more of, you know, Liv Morgan leaves SummerSlam about in the same place she was going in. I don't think she was really hurt by it as much, but I also don't think she was really helped by it either.
Yeah, but she's the champion, Greg. I mean, that's the problem. Like, I think they're going to go Charlotte and Liv because Liv has the title, and Charlotte's going to go after the title, which she should. I mean, why would Charlotte want to go after Ronda? She doesn't have the title right now. So, I mean, what good? I mean, now Charlotte doesn't need the title, and I think Charlotte, you know, in that sense, it doesn't really matter. But with the heel, you know, both being a heel, I think she's automatically just going to go after Liv, which is good. I like Charlotte against Liv. They've never wrestled before. I like that. It's different. I mean, I'm good with that. But I just, the way they played the match, I didn't like. I don't know. You have to make Liv look somewhat credible. Yes, Liv doesn't have to dominate Ronda, and she's not going to, but give her, I mean, like this.
I thought she was credible in the sense that her defense was really good. You know, Ronda, coming from her background and being as good as she is at getting people to submit, and that being a large part of her character, Liv never did submit. She was always able to get to her. She was always able to counter Ronda's hold. So I think if you look at it from that point of view, you know, it wasn't Liv looking strong by being on offense all the time, by having Ronda on her heels or on the mat, but it was Liv looking, I even hate to use the word strong, but Liv looking like she could stay and go toe-to-toe with what Ronda is known for. And so I think there's something to be said for that. You know, I think that's also incumbent upon the announcers to point that out. I don't think it should be up to the fans to have to read that deeply into the match. And so, you know, I think the announcers need to hit that home on SmackDown is that, you know, Liv took everything Ronda had, and, you know, until the very end when she ended up tapping, you know, she was able to counter. She was able to get to the rope. She was able to not fall victim to Ronda Rousey's strengths.
And that is a fair point. That's totally fair. I mean, it wasn't very long for her to do a lot of it, but she did enough to where it's like, okay, yeah, she knows how to get out of moves, and she's very quick on her feet and that kind of thing. So, like, that is fair. I just – it was – I mean, Ronda, like I said, going heel was fine. I like the end of it as far as that. I like that they went in that direction and they had to. I think it was time. I just wish they could have done it a little better, but it's all in the matter of the beholder, you know, what you think of it. But going into, I did want to say real fast, I'm definitely, of course, I'm happy Bayley is back. I'm so happy she's back. I like that. I wish she wasn't a heel, but I'm curious where they go with it. And I'm intrigued where they go with it. I told Zach, I'm very intrigued, which is good. I just, man, they cheered that she got a big old pop like you knew she was going to, and I just wish they would have kind of just gone with it and let her be a baby face. But ultimately, Becky's a baby face again, and that's where they needed to go there. So I'm glad that Becky and Ronda, it looks like they're going to go to WrestleMania in the roles they should be in, and I'm excited about that. But I wanted to talk to you about the tag team match. I mean, Uso Street Profits was another really good match, like you knew they were going to have. Again, Jeff Jarrett being in the match was just dumb. I mean, he meant nothing to the match. He did nothing in the match other than, you know, his referee shtick, which I guess he was fine in the referee arena, but it was like, why did he need to be in this? One thing I'll say is, gosh, Montez really oversold what do you call the movie does when he gets like 15 feet in the air? He oversold that so much. But the frog splash. And gosh, he oversold that so much. I'm like, dude, I like that you sold it, but to me, you oversold it like way too much. But where do you think the Usos go from here? Because again, there's just not a lot of formidable tag teams to go up against them right now. And the Viking Raiders are heels, so that's not going to work. Where do they go from here with them?
You know, that's a good question. I don't have a good answer to that. They, like you said, the Viking Raiders that are getting a big push. I think they're the vicious something Viking Raiders now. I'm not sure if that's a permanent name or what it is, but they've been calling them that on SmackDown. They're heels, so they're probably out of the picture. And the New Day, I mean, we've had our share of Usos and New Day, and right now the New Day is getting dominated by Viking Raiders, so it certainly doesn't seem like they're on the radar of the Usos. So, yeah, there are not a lot of teams who, you know, you would imagine the Usos would be facing. And it's not even like NXT of old, where you could call up a team that was ready to go. I mean, NXT is a different format now. I mean, it's a lot of people getting their feet wet on national television. So, you know, by the way it's situated, there are not a lot of people ready to be called up and utilized in a spotlight position on the main roster right now. So, you know, you could cobble together some folks who are not doing anything in the mid card and use them as a tag team. And, you know, the other thing is the Usos just being around Roman Reigns, they don't necessarily have to have a feud all the time. You know, because they're going to be on TV as Roman Reigns' backup. They're going to be interfering in his matches. They're going to be on TV with Paul Heyman. So they're going to have focus just by being in the bloodline. And so, you know, I think they could get away with for at least a few weeks until WWE kind of figures out what they want to do as not having any feud. I mean, they get involved with, Drew McIntyre. You know, they are... With Roman Reigns not being on every SmackDown anymore, they are sort of, along with Paul Heyman, Roman's television representatives. And so, you know, you could see a situation in the build-up to Clash of the Castle where they're more involved in Roman Reigns' feud with Drew McIntyre, perhaps taking on Drew McIntyre in one-on-one matches on TV, than having their own feud. So that's kind of how I could see it unfolding.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, the Usos are great. There's no doubt about it. They're a fantastic tag team. And, I mean, I did notice in the match tonight that, I mean, again, I love even – and I notice in AEW all the time, too. Like, I love super kicks. But, man, do you feel like they overdo super kicks? Because it seems – there's an awful lot of super kicks in a lot of matches. And it just seems – I mean, some look really snug and some are like, well, look a little off. But is it me or does it seem like there's just too many of them?
There's a lot of them. You know, more so in if you're watching the Young Bucks, if you're watching the Usos, definitely there's a lot of them. I don't think there's a lot of them outside of a couple of teams, but the teams that or the wrestlers who do them a lot. And so I think it just makes it seem like they're happening more often.
Yeah, that's fair. And then I just want to say real fast what Paul was saying. I'm so glad Dakota's back. And I think Triple H will use her the right way because she is a very, very talented woman. I think she can do a lot of good things on the main roster. I'm glad with her and Io.
I look forward to the first interaction between her and Raquel Rodriguez on SmackDown. That should be interesting.
Yeah. It really should. So I was glad. I'm super pumped that they're because, I mean, I've been saying for a while that Dakota was so underutilized in NXT. Like, I mean, for a little while, she was okay. I mean, they did some good things initially with Raquel. And then once that went off the rails, they just, I don't know what they did, but it was just wacky. So I'm glad she's there. And Io is obviously fantastic, too. So I'm curious to see where they go with that. But the last quick thing, I'll just, you know, talk about the Brock Roman real quick as far as. I'm glad this is it. Thank God. I'm glad this is it. But for what they did tonight, it was really different and really refreshing and good. I mean, I'm not a fan of last man standing matches in general, but for what they did tonight, they put it all out there, and I appreciated that part of it. I mean, Brock gave a lot more tonight, did a lot some cool spots that you don't see that were different. You know, props to them for putting up a heck of a match for what they had. And like you said, the issue with Roman is, you know, eventually somebody's going to have to take a title or both off of him, and I just don't see who. I mean, could do it with Drew, of course, because Drew is still very over, and I still think Drew has a lot of potential with where he's at right now, but I don't know if they're going to pull that trigger. And other than him, I don't see anybody else that can do it for a while. So, but I thought it was a good show. I thought they did really well. And, Greg, I appreciate you, you know, again, being on here late, man. I appreciate you taking my call, letting me vent a little bit. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for all you do. Appreciate you taking my call.
Yes. Thank you for calling in tonight. And after all the pay-per-views, I know you are a frequent collaborator here on Wrestling Night in America, Sean. So we love hearing from the usual suspects, but we also love hearing from new people. And just to kind of put a bow on that Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns talk is the one thing you can say about this match tonight is it was a fitting end to the Brock Lesnar-Roman Reigns feud. It was a fitting tribute in many ways to the previous Brock-Roman matches that we've seen. This was like the usual Brock-Roman match on steroids. I mean, it was just like it was a bigger spectacle of a match, and we're used to seeing Brock-Roman matches as spectacles. This was an even bigger spectacle of a match. And, you know, it was sort of a tribute to those previous matches. And certainly it's good to know that it's done as it's been advertised, the last match. And, you know, to Drew McIntyre and Sean's point about the potential of Drew McIntyre defeating Roman Reigns, it is there. And I think when you add in the fact that they are going to be doing the first pay-per-view from the UK in what, 30 years, Clash at the Castle taking place in Wales. You know, that's Drew McIntyre's backyard, basically. And so if you were ever going to switch at least one of the titles, if not both, if you're ever going to, and if The Rock was for sure not going to be at WrestleMania next year to where you would want Reigns to have both the titles going against The Rock, I can't think of a better place, big stadium, hometown guy, place that hasn't gotten a pay-per-view in 30 years, at this level, I can't think of a better place to do it, you know? So, that's the argument for Drew McIntyre beating Roman Reigns Clash of the Castle, but we'll have to see how that goes. All right, folks, it's been a pleasure here hanging with you for the last hour plus on Wrestling Night in America. I am Greg Parks, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks and right here on PWTorchDailyCast.com every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, where we talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. Next Sunday, I'll have a member of the Torch family, and we'll probably talk about the fallout from SummerSlam that we've seen on Raw and SmackDown this coming week. And don't forget, I also have a full-page column in every Torch newsletter. So if you're a Torch subscriber, thank you. And I hope you read my columns. And if you're not, remember there's a sale going on tonight, pwtorchvipinfo.com, 99 cents to become a PW Torch member. So thank you for listening, for contributing, your phone calls, your emails, and the like. So until next time, if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.